I'm doing great on this this Tuesday morning. Doesn't feel like a Tuesday, but we're
Oh, it is
here.
Tuesday, right? Yeah.
Longhorns play tomorrow. My whole sense of days gets messed up around Christmas time. And also my girlfriend teaches at a middle school over here in Crowley. And so she's been off for 2 weeks, and that also throws everything off
Yeah.
because she thinks we're both off for work. And that's just not the case.
That's what my wife is always telling me. I'm like this morning, for example, I'm like, hey, after I get done with the show, why don't we go to brunch? And she's like, somebody has to work. I'm like, who? Oh, you. Oh, that's right. Yeah, it's not Saturday. So I don't know,
Oh,
man.
yeah.
So Jordan, I don't know what you guys have, you and Wags have planned, but I do want to ask you, because I think with this Michigan Texas matchup, again, when you look at this on paper, you just see the two programs, and that's like, okay, these are two, of the best that have ever played college, two of the winningest programs in college football ever. This motivation tomorrow, do you think motivation's a factor in this game, or do you think that Michigan, with the hiring there, do you think that, I think this is going to be pretty jazzy little football game, I think we see tomorrow.
I mean, I don't know. I do think Texas will be motivated, especially on defense. They have a lot of guys playing that, have been behind a starter or have been competing with someone else for snaps, sharing those snaps. That's done. Anthony Smith, he doesn't have to share any snaps with the Ungolofa. Bo Barnes finally gets to play. Brad Spence finally gets to play off-ball linebacker. At corner, Kobe Black looks like he's going to end up starting. I think that'll be his first start of the year. I know he played a lot versus A&M, but I don't think he started that game. I might be remembering that wrong. And then, of course, I mean, Jelani's already had some of this season when Michael Taft has gotten hurt, but now he's the man. He's the one, kind of in charge of this secondary. Old Xavier Filsomee will be making another start. Jonah Williams will probably have his highest snap count of the season. A lot to be excited about from those guys. And then, I mean, on offense, Texas has lost, over half the running backs. You get to see Michael Terry tote the pill, Christian Clark, James Simon, Colin Page, maybe. I think he's still on the roster. I don't know. I need to double check that. I will double check that right now. And then, of course, the guy I'm excited to see, Dalen McCutcheon.
That's the one I pointed out a while ago. I told Wags, I said, day's a it's a day tomorrow, my brother. It is a day. Looking forward to
Yeah,
that.
he the DeAndre Moore stuff is pretty weird because people have compared him to they've compared him to Jordan Whittington. He ain't Jordan Whittington between the ears or as a player. Those are two different dudes. But there are some similarities there, and him not being on the team, it opens it up for McCutcheon to play this game. So, by the way, Colin Page is on the roster. I would assume he's RB4. I doubt he's going to get to play. But Jordan Johnson-Rebell, who was a or is a safety, is playing with the linebackers this week or has been in practice. And this is like a 5'11, 195, 200-pound kid. I don't know what he's listed at, but it's somewhere around there. And again, I don't think he's going to play, but it'll be pretty cool if he does. I don't know. A 5'10 kid at linebacker. Hell yeah. And I mean, it's also worth bringing up. I doubt he's going to play at this position either. But Nick Townsend never came off the field at Dekaney. He played special teams. He punted. He returned punts, kicks, was on kickoff. He also was a full-time Mike linebacker and called their defense. In addition to playing tight end, wildcat quarterback, even quarterback at times for them as a senior. So he can play it if, some freak injuries happen and the Jordan Johnson about has to play linebacker and it's not looking pretty well. Nick Townsend might be able to flip to that side of the ball and just do it. It's an instinctual position. Obviously have to know, the frame of the defense you're playing in and what's good and what's not. But yeah, so hey man, I've been seeing these comments from y'all's guest.
It's like, calm down, guys. It's
Yeah.
hey, great conversation. I mean, anyway, previewing this game, by the way. So, how does a game like this, let's say you're a Texas commit. I mean, is a bowl game like this to where we're having this conversation all morning about the motivation of this team, of this program with the deficiencies and so forth and people that are missing. How does this weigh into somebody that's committed to the program? Let's say Texas comes out tomorrow and they lose 20-6 and there's no inspiration. There's no whatever. Is this something that could flip somebody to go somewhere else if Texas comes out and lays, you know, a boiled egg tomorrow?
I think the way to look at it is Texas spending money, it might be best if they get smoked tomorrow. Because then you go into the off season with the red ass and you're like, hey, you know, we got to spend money. Maybe instead of donating $2 million, I'll give three or something like that. But no, I mean, it's obviously going to influence some things. Like if Bo Barnes and Ty Anthony Smith look like they've been playing for 4 years, they're going to be great. And it might go from, okay, you know, instead of getting two linebackers, one that has to start, one that can provide depth, we'll just get two that can provide depth. These guys should be able to start. Tyler Atkinson's coming in. And on the flip side, you know, I don't think it'll be just based off one game because there's so much more to one game. You have to project it to next year and the different things that happens in each game. But, like, if Dalen McCutchen goes out there, and I don't think this is going to happen, but let's say he looks like hot ass.
Mm-hmm.
And Texas is probably going to think, like, okay, let's look at Dana Scudero more. We need a slot receiver to start. Or Jermaine Bishop, he might get some more freshman opportunities than you originally expected. Now, you don't take, you know, all that and make a decision for the upcoming season based off one bowl game when it's the kid's first time ever starting and getting real playing time. But it will be in the back of your mind, and you will think about it. And, I mean, depending on how it goes, like, there will be a domino effect and ramifications in the portal one way or another. So, yeah, that's how I'd sum it up.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. All right, Wags, welcome back, my man. I'm going to jump out. I got to go pick up my work truck and be done for the year.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah, see you guys on postgame tomorrow.
See you next year.
What's up, dude?
Yeah, how many of those jokes you've been using all week? I'll see you next year.
I haven't used any yet, man. That's the first one I've actually heard.
You sit on a throne of lies.
I swear. I mean, I got old man cheesy jokes, but you woke up feeling the cheesiest today, for sure.
Yeah. No, I know Wags is all the dad jokes. All the dad jokes.
I got the good dad jokes, man.
Yeah. No, you're what's up? I hope things with you and your wife and family stay good forever, because you would be a weird stepdad.
Yeah, I would, wouldn't I? That'd be a little...
All stepdads are weird in some form, though, you know, because it's like, you know, you ain't. But anyways, welcome in. It's the Lone Star Playbook. I'm Jordan.
I tell you what, if I ever got divorced, I'm never going down that road again. Like, if I get divorced, I'm done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not getting trained again. No.
Yeah. Well, hey, hopefully we never have to talk about that.
Yeah. Hopefully, I mean, we have a great relationship, so. I don't know. After the conversation we had this morning, though, maybe not. I'm kidding.
Yeah, but hey,
what's up, man?
I'm good. I'm I mean, it's kind of crazy to think that the year's about to end. Like, it's really December 30th. You know what else is today? I can't believe people are gonna make fun of me for knowing this. You know whose birthday it is today?
I don't.
LeBron James.
You are LeBron James's biggest fan, aren't you?
Yeah. You know, I might throw some on the grill later, might hit a cigar later, you know. No, I'm playing.
Get the hell out of here, man.
Those memes are always funny to me. But all right, so gonna hit on some comments first. Antoine says Khalik Lockett wearing number 5 next year, Jermaine Bishop in 7. Yeah, so Jermaine Bishop has worn actually, he wore 7 as a junior and senior, and as a sophomore, I think, was wearing 13. And then as a freshman, he had to wear like 19 or something at Willis. But I know he wants to wear number 7. Khalik Lockett in high school always wore number 5. Number 5 was taken when he showed up on campus because Wingo went to 1 and Wisner went to 5. So maybe Lockett's in 5 next year, gets what he wants, and that opens it up for Jermaine Bishop. But yeah, so... Some other comments, Jamie French is from Jacksonville. Give him some time. Yeah, I bet he probably sees the highest snap count he's seen. And I do think, too, that we'll get into this later in the show, but I do think there's an opportunity for Texas to get a multiple scores somewhat early, and then that'll get the twos and the younger guys in the game quicker. Because the way Michigan is built, they can't consistently pass the football, and it's still run first team. Now, we'll see if Biff Poggi just starts calling shit like it's Madden. But I do think they're going to try to run the ball. But, I mean, if you get down two scores and it's the third quarter, you're not going to be running the ball. So, you know, Bryce Underwood, he's immensely talented. He's the number one prospect for a reason. I do fully believe he'll be a first-round pick and will be a, you know, entirely different player whenever Michigan comes to Austin and what will be the 2027 season. But he's still a true freshman.
Right.
And as good as he is, he still does some dumb true freshman shit. All of them do. First-year starters make mistakes. Shit, look at Arch Manning this
right.
year.
I was just gonna
Even he hasn't been perfect. So them having a consistent passing offense is something I don't think will happen. Their left tackle was in Orlando but did not practice. He was just in street clothes the first practice. And he might not be playing. He's a first-year starter at left tackle for them, but has either 2 or 3 years of eligibility left. And a lot of Michigan folks tend to think he's going to enter the portal. So we will see about that. But they're also missing either their left or right guard, who's been a 2 or 3 year starter, team captain. He's sitting out for the draft. So they could be down 2 starting linemen. You look at their receiver core. Their best receiver is Andrew March. He's a true freshman. He wasn't even the best receiver in Houston last year as a high schooler. And that's Michigan's best player. Like, I thought March was going to be good, but I'm genuinely dumbfounded. He, like, led the Big Ten in freshman receiving yards and was as successful as he was.
I mean, maybe that's where some people don't, you know, hit their stride or hit their spurt, or rather, until they're out at school. Maybe he's a late bloomer, I guess, Jordan. I don't know what to tell you, man. Or maybe he's got the right coaches coaching him up.
No. No. Michigan's receivers coach.
That ain't it.
I do think part of it is the fact that Michigan has no one else at receiver, and he's the only one that can get open. He's also a freshman with
– he's just a de facto
with Underwood. They're probably close. And also, I mean, the Big Ten. Like, I'm not trying to be SEC homer here, but there's a difference in the level of receiver play and defensive back play in the two conferences.
You're right.
And, like, I looked at Texas's schedule this year, the 12 opponents they play. And I'm like, how many of these teams would I say have a better receiver room than Michigan? Florida. A&M. Who else? I got the rest of it here. Florida, A&M, Ohio State.
Or, you know, you're talking about this past year, not next year. Gotcha.
Yeah. Georgia. Shit, Mississippi State. Anthony Edwards.
I don't know. Mississippi State.
Can you name any Michigan receivers besides Andrew Marsh?
No, you're right. I mean, you're right.
That's 5. And then, like, Vandy, even. And that's kind of it. Like, so.
That's a good point. Like, I didn't.
So, I do think that Texas will be all right. Because they have most of the offense. Yes, they're missing a bunch of running backs. They're going to throw the ball a lot. They'll be all right. DeAndre Moore having
him on defense. Aren't we missing like 7 guys on defense too?
Yeah. Ethan Burke. Here, I'll just pull up this list so I don't mess it up.
I see it as like a 17-13 type of game in favor of Texas.
All right. So on defense, Melvin Hills, who never plays, he's in the portal. He's missing the game. At edge, Ethan Burke, who's been a 3-year starter, sitting out for the NFL draft. At linebacker, you're missing 3 big names. Trey Moore, who's sitting out for the draft. Anthony Hill, sitting out for the draft. And Leon Golofao, who entered the portal. And then at cornerback, Jalen Gilbo is sitting out for the draft.
Sure.
Malik Muhammad is sitting out for the draft. And then Santana Wilson, who pretty much never played, is going in the portal. And then at safety, you're missing Michael
Taft. Best of luck, Gilbo. Seriously, best of luck.
Yeah, you're missing Michael Taft, who's out for the draft. Derek Williams Jr., who's in the portal. And that is it. So you are down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You're down 8 starters / like consistent 2 deep contributors. on defense. Most of them in the back seven outside of Ethan Burke.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, hey, the offense is there. Arch Manning's there. The whole line is there. I think they can put up points.
We're going to see how deep we are, right? We're going to see, you know, if we actually have arrived as a program or not. Because a lot of these programs, they can supplement like this and have twos become ones very easily and not miss a beat or not miss too much of a beat, right? Maybe a skip, maybe a little quirk in the step, but they're right back on pace. Like we'll see if we can – we'll see if we have that in our ability. So.
Yeah, Antoine with the quote from Steve Sarkisian on the new 105-man scholarship roster cap. You go to 105 now, I don't get more money. I just get a more watered-down version. I don't know if we'll ever get to 105. Interesting. I do think they will get to 105 eventually. I definitely do think that. But, yeah, I mean, what he's saying is what the entire rest of the Power Four dealt with last year. Every single FBS conference went up to 105 ahead of last season. The SEC is the only one that didn't. Everyone else dealt with it. Look at those schools that had success with it. Copy it. Copy their homework. That's what everyone else does in college football anyways. Antoine, talking about some basketball. I had no idea these guys were playing down in Allen. You need a Antoine, if you can, shoot me a DM or something so I can get some of these schedules from you, because I am looking at hitting some basketball games to see some football prospects, because, you know, you can interview them there too. But BJ LaFell, who is the son, this is going to make you feel old, Wags, of Brandon LaFell.
Jesus.
Brandon LaFell Jr., who plays at Shadow Creek with Jalen Adai, who's Joseph Adai's son.
Jesus, God.
Adai is a sophomore. LaFell's a freshman. I think Adai has always lived in that area of Houston since being done with the NFL and, you know, obviously played for the Texans. And then LaFell has been out of the league for a while, but he's from Houston. He went to Houston Lamar, and Shadow Creek's head football coach, his name is Tyrone Green. He was Brandon LaFell's receivers coach at Houston Lamar. So he's coaching the dad and the son, which is pretty cool. BJ played JV ball this year. He was a two-way quarterback and safety, and
he didn't even play varsity.
Well, he got moved up to varsity.
He started off on JV. Gotcha.
Yeah, Shadow Creek is a D1 prospect factory. I will say they've underperformed. They've lost in the first and second round too many times the last few years. But I mean, they have just as many, if not more, offers on their team than anyone else in the state. Anyone else, and they have more D1 prospects on their team than anyone else in the state. Like Chris Stewart, who signed with Texas, who will move on campus in a few weeks, was a senior this year at Shadow Creek. His sophomore year, there were five other kids in that receiver room with Power 4 offers.
Oh, damn.
And four of those five ended up signing to Power 4 schools. And they had a kid transfer out because he wanted to play and couldn't play in that room. He transferred back ahead of his junior year. That kid's committed to Georgia.
He transferred back.
Yeah, Aiden Starling. He went from Shadow Creek to Iowa Colony back to Shadow Creek and got approved. I don't know how, but
yeah.
And he's now committed to Georgia.
You gotta have a
hard. He transferred high schools because he couldn't get enough playing time as a sophomore, and is now committed to Georgia.
That is crazy.
That's how loaded they are. So that's why BJ LaFell didn't play varsity as a freshman, but. His JV tape, I mean, he's a terrorist. He's the best player on the field at every position, safety, quarterback. He wants to play QB and is still in the mindset of, I'm a QB. Eventually, someone's going to be like, brother, your dad is LSU royalty because he's a receiver. You are a receiver or a safety. Don't play quarterback.
Right.
So, and also, he probably won't be taller than like 6'1". So, I mean, that'll help him more at those positions as well. But with Adai, he's a receiver. He was on varsity this year as a sophomore and was pretty much the receiver one whenever Chris Stewart was hurt or the two. He finished, I think, second on the team in receiving yards or first, one of the two. But yeah, really good group there. They both play basketball. They're great basketball players. And then they move LaFell up like in the 10th game of the regular season. He was on for the playoffs. And I think he actually scored a touchdown in the first round. But yeah, Adai and LaFell are going to be the two dudes running that school and that program for the next 3 to 4 years.
And they both hoop?
Yeah, they both hoop and both play football. And I assume they'll both run track and we'll go sub 11 or something too. Jeez. But yeah, a lot of NFL legacies over there. Jose said, Jordan, the portal market doesn't correct itself due to the cap. Who gets the blame? The players, the schools. They can't work together to get the market to align better. Capitalism at its finest. Well, this is actually a great question. There has to be a CBA in place, some form or fashion. Now, that whole discussion is nuanced because you have to remember, at the end of the day, these kids still have to do class and schoolwork and pass and get credits and all this. And they still are the, you know, everyone's favorite word, student athletes, right? So it's different. I don't know if a CBA will ever come about or how it would. But regarding this question, who gets the blame? It's everyone. It is everyone. You know, people are talking about money's ruining college football. Money's been ruining college football, brother. Eric Dickerson's right. Gold Trans Am. Everyone knows the story. Since the dawn of
time, it's just on the surface now. So
yeah, and it's in your face, and it gets reported about. Since the dawn of time,
my bad.
College football programs have done whatever it takes to get the best football players in their program. It is recruiting. That is what happens. There's a reason Clemson doesn't recruit as well as they used to now that NIL is a thing. Their secret operation only nets about $500,000. Whole nother ball game whenever the, you know, there's players making twice what your whole bankroll was for a full team. Like, that is what's changed it. But who gets the blame? The players who are really good at college football and can name their own price, and the schools that will do whatever to pay that player for that price. This is a crazy story, and I feel like I talk about this once a month now as we've gotten closer to the portal. But when Colin Simmons committed to Texas in what would have been August of 2023, he was always going to Texas. He always wanted to go to Texas, but they weren't going to make it easy on Texas, right? They were going to make sure they got, you know, the pennies they felt they're deserving of. The schools in the top three, Texas, LSU, Miami, SMU was also in there, but he was never going to go to SMU. SMU actually offered the most money out of everyone, but he didn't go there because he didn't want to go to SMU. Texas offered the second most, and they offered him for his freshman year $350,000. $350,000 for his freshman year as a five-star.
That went up, right?
Well, just listen. That was about the going rate, slightly above market value or market rate, whatever, for a five-star edge rusher at the time. He committed in August, signed in December. That was it. Now, I heavily assume that number went up to like 425, 450 by the time he actually enrolled. But still, do you know how crazy that is? He's in the 2024 class. Wags, the cycle later in 2025, I know of at least four kids that made seven figures over twice as much as Colin Simmons did. And not one of those dudes came close to having half the impact Colin Simmons did as a freshman. Not one of those dudes plays a premium position like edge rusher, offensive tackle, or quarterback. Not one of them. But they're great players. They are, and they will be good players. And Texas had to pay that because that's what it took to get those guys.
So now imagine the bag that Colin Simmons.
Yeah. I mean, shit, he made over $1 million his sophomore year. But he But – like, if let's say there's a Colin Simmons in the 2027 cycle, same exact player, same ranking, one of the top edge rushers in the country, that kid would make 1.3 his freshman year and probably, you know, might not have the same success as Colin Simmons. You know, if it's an identical player, he would, but this is all hypothetical. So,
Simmons had what, seven sacks, eight sacks freshman year?
I think he had 9.5. He led the team, I know that. I don't think he hit double digits, but it was very
I know he didn't get double digits,
but that is the problem with college football, is that teams are continuing to do whatever it takes to get the best players. Best players want the most money. Schools are giving the most money. And the whole thing is crazy because, like, you get these kids in on deals that 2 years ago were market value. And let's say it's a 2-year deal or 3-year deal. And then 2 years later, there's an incoming freshman coming in for market value, but it's three times as much.
Right.
And by the first kid then is starting. By the time he's like, what the fuck? He's making more money than me, and I start? And he hasn't played a snap?
Right.
It's the Trey Wisner and Derek Cooper situation. Derek Cooper was going to make more money at Texas this year than Trey Wisner would have had to come back. And it makes sense. Derek Cooper has is a much better prospect than Trey Wisner was coming out of high school. We all will see that when the season kicks off in August and September and everyone gets to see Derek Cooper.
No, but I mean,
he deserves that. It's a five-star running back. That's what you had to pay to get him.
I understand what you pay a prospect. I understand what you have to pay a prospect. I get that. Yeah. But also, like, I'm in Wisner's corner too, because you should have to pay based off of production too.
Yeah. But it's not always about production.
No, you're right.
Cam Coleman. Totally
right. It's sometimes about scarcity, honestly. It's about, you know, what the value or what the market needs.
Yeah. I mean, in the portal, like, there's only so many difference-making interior D linemen, and they all get paid more than they're worth. But even their worth is like 1.2. That means they'll get 1.7 because there's only three of those dudes worth that, you know? Schools are going to get desperate. Like, Dominic Williams has probably been grossly overpaid 2 years in a row now. I think he has 1 year of eligibility left. He's number 52 for OU interior.
I know who you're talking about, yeah.
He chose OU over Texas and LSU in the portal out of TCU. So, I mean, the market conversation is fascinating because it continues to go up. And, you know, it makes sense to me because, this is something that's kind of funny. So, I'm at the All-American Bowl last year. And the way it works, on check-in day, they have to go through a car wash in this hotel. Not like an actual car wash, but they have to go booth to booth, talk to all these people. It's required. They have to pick up all their gear, and at the end, they get their hotel key. But the final thing they have to do before they get their hotel key for the week is they have to come in the 24/7 sports room. We get their height, weight, wingspan, arm, and they sit down with someone to get interviewed.
Get interviewed, yeah.
And so most of the kids get there in like a four-hour period, but there's a few stragglers. And some of our staff will leave because there's only so many kids left. And we're in there last year waiting for these three kids that's like flight got delayed or something. And they walk in, and they all have the shittiest attitude. And I don't blame them. I would have been pissed too. My flight's delayed. I got to talk to these losers at 24/7 Sports. And they're like, man, why do we have to get their key
just to get everything, right?
Yeah, they're like, why do we have to do this? And they're walking around with their bag, all the gear and stuff. And Andrew Ivins, who is the director of scouting for us, the main guy in charge of the rankings. He oversees the scouting team. He's like, I don't know if I – and he was joking. I want to make that very clear. He's like, I don't know if I talk like that if I were you. And he's like, what do you mean? He's like, I'm basically God, man. And they were like, what? And he was just fucking with him. But he's like, y'all do understand everyone's negotiations for money is based off of rankings. Like, the floor for negotiations when you're in high school or in the portal – and what your agent is talking to a GM about, the floor and the number that gets established at first is based off of rankings. Are you a 3-star, 4-star, 5-star? What position are you at? That's what it's based off of.
Right.
And
he's fucking with
that to the kids, and the kids are like, damn, make me a 5-star. It was funny, though. But that part is true. And so you think about it, okay, a 5-star edge rusher. Last year, you had to have, like, you had to start that, or Colin Simmons' cycle in 24. You had to start that conversation, that negotiation with, like, a floor of 275, something like that. Now, if you're not talking 900K off rip with a 5-star edge rusher, he's hanging up the phone, or his agent is. That's how it's gone. So it is nuts. And I will say, too, it is very interesting because the recruiting industry gets more accurate over time. The longer this goes about, the more accurate we will be as far as ranking kids, projecting them with stars. Because many people bitch and talk about stars. This kid should be a 4-star. He should be a 3 or 5. Very few people understand it's draft projection. 5 stars, there's 32 of them. Those are first-round picks. If you have 5 stars attached to your name, we're projecting you to be a first-round pick in 3 to 4 years or whenever you're draft eligible. If you're a 4-star, with a national ranking from 24/7 Sports, means you're projected to be a 2nd to 7th round draft pick. If you're a 4-star without a national ranking, it means we're projecting you to be a priority undrafted free agent. If you're a 3-star, it means, hey, you can be a college player and you might even play your way into getting drafted, but these kids ranked in front of you have a better chance and are easier to project to being drafted. So I could talk this all day. The market conversation with numbers and rankings is fascinating because it moves like this. Yeah, and we're mostly up, sure. but yeah, so I don't know. Sorry, I'm catching up on some of these. Didn't Dabo fire his OC? And yes, his OC was Garrett Riley, whose brother Lincoln Riley is playing the TCU Josh Hoover the Furry less Horned Frogs. So there you go. All right, Rex St. Charles with a great question. And a lot of people ask about this. How about college success? Why is it about the draft? How do you deem college success? All conference?
Based off, I
all American teams?
Are we talking about individual success or program success?
Yes. Well, he's talking about rankings and how they're set up to, okay, you know, reflect the draft, right? There's no way to really deem college success. But at the end of the day, 9 times out of 10, the best players in college football are the ones walking across the stage and shaking the commissioner's hand and on day one of the draft. Oftentimes, the best players are getting drafted. So that's the way to do it. But, like, I'm trying to think of someone that had a great college career and just didn't work out of Texas that was a 3-star and that makes it make sense.
That didn't work out of Texas?
Yeah, for like a 3-star. And Rex St. Charles, I get what you mean, but there's a ton of different all-conference teams by the conference, coaches, media, fans, same with all-American teams, same with awards. It's just the easiest way to set it up is 5-4, 3-star and with the draft. Because, like, what is a 5-star? What are you projecting them to be? All-conference? There's a lot more than 32 all-conference players. There's a lot more than 32 all-Americans. So it's going to be an imperfect system. It's never going to be perfect, but I think the way it's set up is the right way to do it. All right, I want to talk about some games tonight real quick.
Hey, how'd you do over the holiday slate?
I've not done very well in bowl games, actually. Cal fucked me.
I took Hawaii. I actually went against the grain that time and took the Warriors.
Yeah, I stopped checking the score when they were up like 17 or 21, and I'm like, they've lost? For real?
I think BYU.
To the Rainbow Warriors?
I lost the BYU game. That's the one that hit me. And there was one more. I can't think of it. There was one. I only lost two games over the holiday slate so far.
I did not bet on the BYU game.
Man, you fucking talked me on to Haynes King, dude.
Haynes King, the GOAT. Future Longview head football coach. I'm not joking.
No, I know that's going to happen. That's where he went to school, right?
Yeah, but his dad's the head coach there and has been for like 2 decades.
Oh.
And his dad is a legend everywhere and in East Texas, especially in Longview, especially. Cool story, too. He has been fighting mouth cancer.
Oh, shit.
This year. His dad has. And what's it called?
Copenhagen.
He missed a few games and was up. He missed like two when he was in the hospital, but for two or three of them, he coached and called plays and had a headset on. He was just in the booth in like a wheelchair. But by the end of the season, I'm pretty sure he was back on his feet on the sidelines. So that's some East Texas stuff right there.
Yeah.
But all right, we're looking at tonight's games on a Tuesday. You got Coastal Carolina versus Louisiana Tech. La Tech favored by -10. Sonny Cumbie is the guy in charge at La Tech, by the way, for those curious.
Give me wrong team. No, it's not wrong team favored. Give me. Fuck. That's a lot of points, man. Coastal Carolina doesn't win, but they get within the 10 points. So La Tech doesn't cover. They get the dub, but they don't cover.
Nah, this is La Tech. Take it to the bank. They're covering. This is the fucking Radiance Technologies.
You said the same fucking shit about Cal and Hawaii, and you're sitting here telling me to jump.
With Cal, I was jumping off. I was confident as hell. I'm like, take it to the bank. This is a done deal. Jerry and Chiave, Sagapolatele. But how about this? The Radiance Technologies Independence Bowl. How about that? All right, Tennessee, Illinois, Liberty Mutual Music City Bowl in Nashville, Tennessee. Going to be a lot of orange in there. We have the 8-4 Tennessee Vols versus the 8-4 Illinois Fighting Illini. Tennessee favored by 3. The point total 61.5.
Yeah, give me Tennessee and take the over on this. I was big on Illinois before. Yeah, that's good. Tennessee's good with it. Everybody's playing for Tennessee?
No, they're missing a few guys. Their top receiver's out, Chris Brazel. He's sitting out for the draft. They have a few other draft opt-outs, a few portal opt-outs. I'll tell you what, I think Illinois could get him. I assume Luke Altmyer's playing in this game.
In Tennessee. It's in Nashville, man.
They got Brett Bielema, huh? Huh?
No.
So I do think – here's the deal. Very few people –
Tim Beck has been fired, so there's a good chance that line is pretty good.
Yeah, he's the first hire that Hartline made at USF where it's like, are you sure about that?
Hartline hired Tim Beck?
Yeah, at USF. He's going to be the OC.
For offensive coordinator? No yeah, way.
I'm pretty sure.
No
yeah.
way.
Isn't it funny how that whole like old Texas coaching staff came from, or a few of them came from like small G5s in Florida? And then they all ended up back at small G5s. And like Tom Herman is at FAU.
It's the circle of life, man.
Tim Beck is going to be at USF. Charlie Strong was at USF for a while.
Crazy.
Nightmare blunt rotation right there. But here's what I was saying. Some coaches don't think about this at all. In fact, most coaches don't think about this at all. But a few do. And you know what they think? We're in the Big Ten. We can get this victory for the Big Ten. Beat an SEC school. We can use this in recruiting. Illinois, they recruit a bunch of kids from the South, especially Florida. Fun fact, and I'm going to be wrong on this, but I'm going to be right on some part of it. Per Andrew Ivins, director of scouting for 24/7 Sports, and I'll use ChatGPT to fact check this and have it ready next show. Illinois has had more draft picks from the state of Florida in like the last 5 years than both Florida and Florida State.
The fighting Illini has had NFL drafts, has had NFL draft selections.
They had a first rounder like 2 years ago, Jerzon Newton.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Who's from Florida?
Who is Florida produced?
No one. Very few people.
Wait a sec. Hold on. Where's Pearsall from?
From Florida. But I don't know if he's in the.
Okay, so you're,
I need to hit up Ivins and get the time period for this. But it's either Florida or Florida State. I don't think they have more than Miami. And I'm talking about native Floridians getting drafted.
Right. That's why I was at. Like, I knew Ricky Pearsall went to.
Actually, Ricky Pearsall was at Arizona State before Florida. So I don't know if he would count.
Okay.
I don't think he's from Florida. But yeah, pretty crazy, though. I think Illinois can get it done. I would put money on Tennessee to win, but I think Illinois could cover, and if they upset them, it won't be surprising. They're going to come out. They're going to try to make it a, you know, Mark Stoops style, bring you down into the mud fight, make it a rock fight, and it's going to be an ugly game. So, I don't know. I'm going to go
with Tennessee.
The one I'm looking forward to, we talked about his brother, just got fired from Clemson. Number 16, USC, Trojans at 9-3. Going into Texas's old stomping grounds, or grounds that used to get stomped on in the Alamo Dome in San Antonio, to take on the 8-4 TCU Horned Frogs, who are without Josh Hoover, the furry quarterback, because the furry quarterback has gone in the portal. So,
where does
what
he
do think, Wags? USC is favored by 5.5.
Give me USC. I'll take USC.
Yeah,
this should be the gimme for the day right here, USC.
Hey, but you know what I think happened the last time the Horned Frogs played in the Alamo Dome?
What?
They came back down like 31 points or something nuts. Or 20.
What's that?
This was in like 2014 or 2015. I don't know if that's the last time they played in the Alamo Bowl. But TCU 1 year, I think it was versus Oregon in the Alamo Bowl. They were down like 28 or 31 points in the second half and came back and won.
Wait, I can't remember that. 2014, 2015? I can't remember. Yeah.
Hold on. Let me look this up. TCU Alamo Bowl comeback.
Temple Rudis, Anthony Joshua. I saw that he got into a fatal, or he survived, but a few people died. I didn't know that he was behind the wheel of the car. I thought that there was another driver involved or somebody else was driving. I didn't expect that he was driving. But yeah, Jesus, glad everybody, or he's okay. I mean, shit. I did see that there were fatalities though. So sucks. Yeah. You go from beating Jake Paul to, I guess that's your celebratory thing. Like Jake Paul, you know, he's that much of a contender that once you get rid of him and once you beat him, you have to go get drunk and drive. I guess he was drinking and driving. Damn, it's crazy.
Yeah, someone needs to kick Jake Paul's ass.
Jake Paul's ass just got kicked by Anthony Joshua, dude. He broke his jaw.
I want more carnage. No, more carnage. I forgot about that. I don't know. I've never been a fan of his, even when he wasn't boxing. But all right, back to some comments. And if y'all have any questions, hit on them. We'll get to them. But from Jose, this is when we were talking about numbers and stuff. Said, what stops someone or some agent paying Jordan to write a fluff article about a fringe five-star player not too far away from that? Yeah, well, here's a – can't speak for On3 or Rivals because I don't work for them, but I can speak for 24/7 Sports. So previously, the way it was set up with rankings, there was like 7 people who had access to changing the rankings or putting in grades. And they would be people who will go unnamed. They would say, hey, give me the story. Let me break it. Your son will go from a 3-star to a 4-star. Or your son's a 3-star no matter what. I'm not going to – I can't cheap this and make him a 4, but I'll make him a higher rank 3-star than he should be, you know, throw some money or whatever. So that is obviously a humongous problem. There's a big conflict of interest, and there would be scoop guys who would be telling the scouting guys, no, you can't move him down. I promised, you know, in exchange for scoop, he would stay ranked this high. But that stopped happening because 24/7 Sports became the first, I guess, recruiting website in the industry to separate recruiting team from scouting team. Recruiting team, your job is to report, break news, have scoop, write stories. Scouting team, your job is to watch film, make rankings, and grade players. That's all they do. So recruiting team has no influence on the rankings of scouting team anymore. It hasn't been like that for years, and the people that were taking money to juice the rankings don't work for us anymore. Can't say that. But the current scouting guys are they're not attached to any of the reporting. So that is why that is the case, you know, to create any, you know, example or create an example of what Jose was talking about here. So, yeah, and 24/7 Sports has been like that for 4 years now where the scouting team, recruiting team has been separate. I don't know how that works at On3 Arrivals because I don't work at On3 Arrivals. So that's what I'd say about that. And, like, I've been around – our guys on the scouting team, and know one of them very well. He's one of my best friends, Hudson Standish. He went to Texas. He's a Longhorn, grew up in Southeast Texas. Great guy. And I've been around, you know, all of them when people have tried to say, hey, you're the scouting guys. Hey, can you make my son this? I'll give you this. And they're like, no. No. Because, like, they get graded on how these rankings turn out. They get raises if 3 years in a row we have the most accurate draft. It matters to them. It's their job. They're not going to fold and bend the knee like that. Now, I can see how other people in the industry might, but the guys in charge of it at 24/7, I do, you know, trust them behind closed doors and in the open to do the right thing. So, yeah. Let's see. Yeah, Rodney Smith is a great point. Says, I know I'm behind, but fear of missing out is to blame for the situation college sports / football's in. So, yeah. Rex St. Charles, is Jackson Jeffcoat a bust then? Awesome at Texas, but not in the NFL. I think he was a 5-star. So, yes, he probably would be classified as like a rankings bust. I wouldn't say so as a player. I mean, he did win
Bednarik
or Best DN
Award. Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year?
Yeah, it was one of those two. Yeah, sorry. Okay, so did anyone see what Steve Sarkisian said about agents today? No. Jeez. Zay Kaplan, I got an answer for you here in a sec. So Steve Sarkisian, and I'll paraphrase this because it's a 2-minute quote, but he said, there's some agents that are rational, and there's some that this is their first time to ever be an agent. I don't even know if they're licensed. We can't even deal with this. Taking shots at people you have to negotiate with. Interesting strategy.
I mean, bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off, right?
I don't know. I know of a few, and I'll be honest, this happens everywhere in college. I'm just going to get called about it because it's the school I cover and not Arizona State or something random. The amount of stories I've heard this year of staff members like cussing out agents and telling them, we can't do this, I'm not losing my job over this, fuck you, this is crazy, hanging up. And the next day they call them, say, hey, man, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done this. How much is this player? Like, well, what's the market looking like for him? Back to normal. Happens at Texas, happens at LSU, it happens everywhere. Yeah. These agents, they ask for too much because they know no matter what, the school isn't going to meet whatever they're asking for, even if it's market value or not, and they're going to try to bring it down. Right. So
that's negotiation 101 there, right? Like when you go in for a raise or when you're negotiating your contract, you don't sit there and go for the lowest bar or for what. No. You know, I always say, what can the position afford? You know what I mean? Like, let's go. That's what I'm worth, motherfucker.
Yeah, and, like, I want $10. But if I go to Texas and say I want $10, they're going to say, no, you're worth $8. So I go to Texas and ask for $15. They say, you're fucking crazy. We're not paying you $15. We'll pay you maybe $12, maybe $10. You go, okay. That's how it works. But sometimes whenever the agent asks for the 15 in the situation, they're like, fuck you, hung up the phone. So I couldn't be an agent right now. That, I mean, I've thought about if I ever, when I do get tired of this, you know, maybe I'll try to do that. But dude, fuck that.
You going back to school to get a law degree?
Hell no. You know, dude, you could go rep Arch Manning right now and nothing's stopping you. There's no rules or regulations stopping it.
No, but I would like to have a law degree as a you know, some type of background or pedigree to kind of fall back on in terms of
a third to half of these agents do not have law degrees.
That is terrifying.
It's different in the NFL where it's required. You have to be certified. So
I would be terrified to put my career in the hands of someone that legally doesn't know what the hell they're talking about. But hey, Lamar Jackson, it's worked out.
Yeah. Didn't Earl Thomas also rep himself?
I don't know. I'm not sure. It wouldn't surprise me.
All I think about is just Earl Thomas's crash out on the
on the way out.
To Pete Carroll.
On the way out, yeah.
And then the whole situation, him and his brother having some fun, and his wife walks in and points a gun at him in Baltimore. Some real Baltimore shit, huh?
Hey, man. It's all about the code, bro. It's all about the code down there. Or over there, I should say.
Man,
the wire yet? Have you checked out the wire?
Yeah, we talked about this. I've seen it twice, about 5 years apart, but I remember most of it the second time. I forgot what it was. I think it was some report about how Michigan found like someone on their staff had been taking notes or had, you know, jotted something down about Sharon in the relationship and stuff. And someone quote tweeted the report with that clip from The Wire when Idris Elba, I forget his character's name, is trying to like console all the dealers. And he's like, are you taking fucking notes on a criminal conspiracy? That one's pretty good. There's all the memes from that show. The one of Weebe, or whatever.
A lot of them, man.
When he shot the cop. There's a lot of memes from that. The first time I watched it, I'm like, wait a minute, but yeah. All right, Zay Kaplan asked.
I know Sopranos gets heralded as one of the best series ever. Sopranos is great, but the writing's a little outdated. Right, and so is The Wire. The Wire's writing's outdated too, but in maybe it's just because I'm from Baltimore, but The Wire, just for me, that's number one. Sopranos is probably third.
I've never seen Sopranos.
I gotta go with Game of Thrones as two. Like, Game of Thrones is up there, but The Wire is pretty tops. You never Wire's seen Sopranos?
My favorite too.
Sopranos is good. It's just old writing. It's yeah. like very 90s turn of the odds. So
someone can make a lot of money re-scripting it, reshooting it from modern day for the present day.
Yeah, I mean, that's all everybody wants. As long as there's an IP out there, somebody will take a shot on it. Nobody wants to be creative anymore. They just want to go off of IPs, anything that's got an IP.
Where does it – Sopranos is based in New York, right?
Yeah, Jersey, New York.
And Joyzy. All right, a few more comments, questions we got. Today, Caplot asks, what's keeping my little bro from getting that last star? He's talking about Jamarion Carlton, the Texas signee. At this point, I think it's very unlikely he will be a five-star. He's going to have to show up and, like, literally murder everyone in front of him at All-American Bowl for a week straight. Rankings, they're not final, but they're pretty set. And, you know, they know the deal. He's playing in a three-down front. He got double-teamed 3 years in a row because he was their best defensive lineman 3 years in a row at Temple. But, you know, you look at the production and even, yeah, he's playing good competition at 6A. But look at this production and the stat sheet of other guys ranked next to him in the competition they play. They have more sacks than he does. Their production's been a little bit better. And now Jamarion isn't a bad player by any means. That's why he's still projected to be a draft pick and a top 100 prospect. But when you're projecting this 3 to 4 years out, there are certain boxes you need to be checked. And he checks the height, weight, speed, physical boxes, but the putting it together and going from athlete and pairing the athlete with the football player and making it work on the football field on the gridiron hasn't clicked as much as the scouting team would like it to click. So, yeah, I'm obviously not in charge of rankings. If I was, he'd be a five-star. I think I've said this since his sophomore year, though, so that shouldn't be new. But, you know, low five, high four, he's in that range. It's a great range to be in, and he's going to make a shit ton of money in college too. So, not a bad spot at all to be in for Jamarion. But yeah, all right. So apparently something happened with Stephon Diggs. I didn't know about this.
Is this was beginning of the month?
What happened? Do you know?
So I don't have all the story, but I believe it's like allegations stems back from like December 2nd or somewhere like beginning of the month where. Yeah, he just that, put his hands on somebody. I didn't know that it was actually strangulation. I thought he just assaulted somebody. I thought he punched somebody. I didn't know it was actually, you know, attempted murder or whatever, if that's the route you want to go. But bad optics, man.
Sorry, we talk about 2025, never funny, but
bad optics, buddy.
He was Homer Simpson, Bart Simpson, and someone.
Yes, man. I thought he just hit the person.
He was Homer Simpson in them. Temple of Brutus said Diggs' attorney told court is trying to pay off the victims. I guess rich folks can pay off victims to get felony violence charges dismissed. I don't understand why judge is taking that into consideration. Hey, if you're good at sports ball, if you're good enough at sports ball, you can get anything covered up. The funniest thing to me that I think is getting forgotten in this situation. Does anyone remember the video in, like, quite literally 4K quality of Stephon Diggs handing out pink cocaine to, like, like model girls on a yacht in Miami?
I don't remember that video. It doesn't surprise me one bit with Stephon Diggs.
I'm going to type.
Go Maryland Terrapins. Yay.
Hey, Stephon Diggs pink cocaine. It's going to pop up right away.
Is it suitable to be? I mean, shit, it's unfiltered. It's Texas Sports Unfiltered. We can watch anything on here.
Well, I don't know about anything.
I don't know about anything.
Okay, I guess the video's been taken down a bit. But there is a photo here from the video. Yeah, I saw that. All right, this is from. There is.
He is ready. He is.
Or it's Molly. Ready. I don't know. I think it's pink cocaine, though. But
it could be Molly.
But yeah. And all the Patriots did was like, yeah, we're handling this internally. And it's like, okay, and that was it. Because it happened in like July when there's not like a weekly press availability or media availability. And like, well, did he get arrested? Did he get charged? No. Is there a case? No. So what are we going to suspend him off of? For having some fun with the fellows, with the ladies? I don't know. It is what it is.
It's NyQuil. Those girls have a chest cold.
That is pretty good. That is pretty good.
Oh, shit.
Okay. All right. We're going to finish it up with a little seriousness. Wags.
What?
I want to ask you.
What?
What makes you think Texas will win and lose this game?
That's a good question. I mean, I would honestly just think like the turmoil and the fallout that everything that was going on with Michigan, and how can they pivot and turn a corner this quick? Even with Winningham coming in, it's not like it's still going to be pogey paint up there too. So here's the thing. Seven guys on defense being out. Eight, right? We kind of penciled that in. Eight on defense missing. I'm all right with the law firm of Simon and Clark toting the rock. I'm fine with that.
And Terry.
There you go. And Simon, Clark, and Terry. He's on the door too.
Wait, sorry. Time out, because I don't want to forget this thought. So the Texas fans that are listening, stick with me. Every offseason, every time whenever media isn't allowed into practice, availabilities or whatnot, and all of the practice reports are based off sourcing. And, you know, we hear, like, one offseason, it was Isaiah Nayer's going to be the best player to ever play football, basically, right? And it's like, well, freshman Xavier, where are they? And everyone is like, no, Isaiah Nayer. And then, you know, he gets hurt in the spring game. Michael Terry, and I can't think of other.
My dog wants to come in real quick. Let me.
Yeah, you're all good. I can't think of other examples like that one off the top of my head. But it's almost like times when there's so much positivity from sourcing and the reporting from the different sites is so similar on one player that it's like, did y'all sit down as a staff and be like, hey, let's juice this guy up. Let's get his PR going. You know, like let's get him some confidence from the meet. Like, how does that happen? But I've noticed Michael Terry. Everyone's talking about how great he is as a running back.
Come on, buddy.
Very curious to see, because I saw Michael Terry play in high school. I saw what it looked like. It was pretty good. Wasn't great, amazing, but, you know, players get better. So I'm very curious to see how that looks, because I do think there is a spirited effort to put his name out there to source. Or to,
where did I go?
From sources. So, yeah. Wags, you good?
I don't know where I went.
Your camera's turned off.
Yeah, you can still hear me though, right?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Talking to a black box. But all right. There we go. I was gonna say, reason you think Texas will win and won't win. You were mentioning the running backs before I took it off the rails.
I think even in spite of, you know, us kind of, you know, missing eight guys on defense and, you know, kind of having to go with a spell on the offensive side of the ball too, I think we'll find a way to kind of get it done. I'm looking at a 17-13 score in favor of Texas.
Wow. For my score prediction, I went 41-31. I think Texas is going to score. I think they've known Baxter was going to be missing bowl practice. They've known that since like October. Jarrett Gibson has been gone since October. Everyone has known Ricky Stewart was going to be gone since like October. Now, the Wisner one was a bit of a surprise. He's been practicing, but for the most part, they knew they were not going to run the ball very much this game. They've known that for almost a full month. They've been working on the pass offense. The pass offense is healthy. The only players that aren't playing in it are DeAndre Moore. The entire starting line's healthy. All the tight ends are playing, and all the receivers besides DeAndre Moore are playing. You look at the running backs, not one of the dudes that's missing this game offered like anything of value in the pass game. Trey Wisner had 66 catches in the last 2 years. 60 of those had to have come on checkdowns and screens. He was never routing dudes up or making plays at the catch point like Jaden Blue was ever doing. They were never going to throw a wheel route to Trey Weisner in the end zone like Texas did twice to score versus Ohio State last year. So I don't think those departures are going to change much regarding the pass offense. I think they're going to throw the shit out of the ball for the most part. And I do think they're going to have a lot of opportunities and will take a lot of shots.
I'd love to see that. I really would. I feel like we can't ever put anything together consistently, and we've had a little bit of a break and a spell. So, you know, I guess the momentum we had, or the vibe that we were building, I think it's just going to get a little bit of stalled out. I would say, I don't know. I guess that's where I'm at. That's where my mindset's at. I hope it's a 45 point outing. That would be great to kind of build off the year and then go into 2026 with a lot of optimism.
Yeah, I also think there's some part of Michigan that's going to roll over, because even when Sharon Moore was their coach, they rolled over this year because all those players knew what the hell was going on the entire season. This got reported. Like, Michigan, the admin and other people that get paid the big bucks in the athletic office have known about this since the spring, summer. The players have had an idea, but have known about this since the start of the season. And they rolled over and didn't play for them very hard whenever they'd get down. Their game versus Ohio State was not that competitive. They lost. They actually got their ass kicked by USC, of all teams.
Right.
In early season USC, not late in the year USC. So I do think if Texas gets up enough scores, two or three, potentially early, they're gonna roll over. I already brought it up. They can't consistently pass the ball. And I do think if Texas loses this game, it's because they had too many quick three and outs passing the ball. And then Michigan got the ball and just ball controlled them. That's how they almost lost to Kentucky. That's how they lost to Georgia and Athens. The other team held the ball the whole time,
right?
Because since Texas couldn't run the ball, all they did was pass it. But when there's drops or incompletions or, you know, miscommunication, it doesn't result in a completion, the clock is going to stop and you're going to have to pass it again because you're behind the chains by that point. And I mean, Georgia had the ball for like 42 minutes of a 60 minute game, something nuts like that.
I hope that's how it is. You guys, I'm usually leaning to stuff on the pessimistic side of the ball just because I don't want to be disappointed. So,
yeah, but I think Texas is going to win, but if they lose, I think it's because they get ball controlled and the passing offense doesn't click. If they win, I think it's because the passing offense does click and Michigan isn't good enough to click well down two scores and, well, they can't run the ball anymore and they'll be screwed. So, I'm stating the obvious here, but the first, like, five drives on defense for Texas this game are so important. Because if you can score early and get 7 or 14 by the end of the first and they're still at 0, it's a whole nother ball game.
Force them to punt, right? Get them, you know, maybe allow them to have, you know, one extended down, right? Or one extended series to where they're moving the chains, right? But if you can force them to, you know, punt the ball before they get to midfield, a couple series in a row, that sets the tone, buddy. That, especially with 8 guys out, dude.
Yeah, and one thing – I'm kind of saying different versions of this, but being in the stadium for the A&M game, I'm like, man, life is a lot different without Anthony Hill. And that was with Trey Moore and Leon Glafau on the field. Those dudes are gone now.
Right. Where's that going to all come from?
This is the list of linebackers playing on tomorrow for Texas. To Anthony Smith, in year two, he's wearing a green dot for the first time. Bo Barnes, in year one, he's wearing a green dot for the first time. A green dot is the coach.
No, communication guy. Gotcha.
Michael Taff and Anthony Hill was who had worn it earlier this year, but both are sitting out for the draft. So two new guys have to wear it. It was Smith and Barnes. After those two, you have Brad Spence, who was a year three player, played off-ball linebacker at Arkansas.
He can play.
And then played edge at Texas this year before getting moved. You have Marshall Landwehr, who's a fifth-year player, got moved from walk-on to scholarship ahead of the season. They had two extra scholarships. We're not at 85. He got one. And then Jordan Johnson-Rubel, who is in there as a two. He's a safety moving up there. Jonathan Cunningham was taken as a linebacker, but he has been working in with the nickels as of lately. So you're going to know very quickly if Michigan
I'm worried about missed tackles. So I am worried about missed tackles, but I mean, you get 8 hats to the ball. That shouldn't be an issue, right? You should be able to gang tackle. Like, defense philosophy shouldn't change much just off of one game. Like, it should still be there. I know that I know the chess pieces aren't in place, and I know, like, the leadership isn't out there on the field. The field generals aren't out there, but, hey, man, let's look forward to 2026, buddy. Yeah. Here we go.
All right, last thing, because I forgot to bring this up.
Sure.
Temple of Brutus bringing up a great point. I was talking about the passing offense. I think it's going to be good. They're going to have time. The O-line will be there. Forgot to mention this, and this has been widely reported for like a week and a half now. But Michigan has 3 opt-outs for the NFL. Derek Moore, who's an edge rusher, 2-year captain. Jayshon Barham, 2-year starter at linebacker, also plays edge for them. He was at Maryland for 2 years before that. And the third opt-out is like a 2-year starter at guard on offense. But Derek Moore, Jayshon Barham, and another guy named Ernest Hosman, who's a starting linebacker, all 3 of those guys, they're not playing in this game. Michigan as a team, and their defense totaled, I believe, 227 pressures or 217 pressures this season. Those 3 guys were responsible for like 78 of those.
Yeah, okay.
And the other 140 or 130 something are made up from like 25 different guys. So if they're getting pressure this on Wednesday, it's going to be because guys that haven't had opportunities got to step up, and they stepped up. So that is one thing I'm watching, and it's very interesting. The cat named Ernest Hosman was a team captain this year, starting linebacker, and he disappeared off the team before their second to last game and went back to Uganda. Yeah, and like, I think he got laced with something. I mean, he was tweeting some crazy shit, like he lost his mind, and they're saying he has a finger injury and is with the program and is working through stuff. But
might just be on a bad trip.
I mean, it's been like a month.
Yeah.
So I don't think Michigan knows what's going on. But apparently he flew back to Uganda. So, yeah, if you're bored, look up Ernest Hosman, E-R-N-E-S-T. H-A-U-S-S-M-A, or no, it's only one S. H-A-U-S-M-A-N-N. So, yeah. But, all right, we're getting out of here. Y'all have a great one. Chan-Chan, Temple of Brutus, Jose, Rodney Smith. Everyone who tuned in today, Jorge Mendoza, haven't seen you in a while, $5 bill. Appreciate all y'all. Antoine, of course, we were talking that pink cocaine today. Just, hey, Capelot. Nathan, Dirty Air Media. Like Dirty Drawers, Rodney Rodriguez, and of course, CB Rex St. Charles. We appreciate all y'all. Y'all have a great one. Happy holidays. Hopefully the next time we see you, the Longhorns have a dub and a great one, and we can pat our backs for being smart and calling a pretty, I think, obvious game for the most part. But yeah, up next, 3rd and Longhorn previews tomorrow's Cheez-It Citrus Bowl. I wonder if they're feeling the cheesiest. I know who is feeling the cheesiest. These guys. We're going to see you on Friday. Peace.